if we don't trust our friends, what that's really saying is we don't trust ourselves. We don't trust our own boundaries. We don't trust our own understanding of whether or not someone's a good person for us. Because if we're constantly self-doubting ourselves, well, how can there be any trust to begin with in the first place?
Hey everyone, it's Joyce, the Abundance Coach, and you're listening to the Abundance Podcast. This week, we are talking all about boundaries. Ooh, I have a very special guest. His name is Ken Reed. He is both a good friend of mine as well as a fellow coach. We started out this month talking about burnout, and then we talked on the subject of play. I like to use this analogy. If you think of a garden, not only do you have to water the flowers, you also have to pull the weeds. Because if you just water the flowers, but you don't care about the weeds at all, then the weeds are going to overtake the flowers. You're not going to have any flowers. If you just pull the weeds, but you don't do the hard work of planting the flowers, you're also not going to have flowers. And unless your weeds are just really pretty, it's probably going to look pretty bad in your garden. So that's how I see play and boundaries. Play is how you can create that abundance, how you can make your life more fun and live in the moment. However, you also have to deal with setting your boundaries, which means you have to know what to get rid of in your life, whether it's people, work projects, favors that friends are asking you for. At the end of the day, we are all on level playing ground. We all have an equal amount of time, and we have a limited amount of time. So in this episode, we go into where our sense of boundaries come from, little exercises you can do to strengthen your boundaries, best practices around what good boundaries look like, what healthy relationships look like, and also some of the surface symptoms that appear when you are living without boundaries. So we talk a lot about the mistakes that we've seen a lot of people make. We're super excited to share it with you. I've also been really pumped about all the responses I've gotten from episodes 1 and 2. If you want to join in on the fun, make sure to find me at The Abundance Coach on Instagram. Lastly, before we get into the episode, this episode actually has a special video version of it that I'll link down below. You'll be able to see Ken and I interact, but also it's completely unedited, so you'll be able to hear all of the awkwardness, all of the rawness, the realness, and you can go ahead and watch that instead if you would prefer. So that's also linked down below. With that being said, this is Ken.
My name is Ken. I am a gay relationship coach that helps single gay men to overcome rejection, heartbreak, loneliness, identify red flags, and attract open, honest, committed partners. I've got a background in therapy. I studied as a counselor before becoming a coach. This role that I'm doing is a dream come true. And yeah, it's been such a fulfilling role to have because it's really allowed me to transform my clients' lives for the better, attract secure partners, but also for me to reflect on their healing and go, wow, I could really learn from the stuff they're going through and really take that on for myself too. So I feel like it's been a really good exchange as a coach to my clients.
What an introduction. Can you tell that he's thought a lot about who he serves and why? Well, we spend the next few minutes talking about coaching and what that journey looks like, but I felt like it didn't really relate to boundaries. So you can catch that in the full video episode on YouTube. But for now, let's fast forward a little bit. This is where we get to hear Ken spill all the tea on how he developed boundaries. I'm curious about what your journey has been like since, you know, starting coaching or even before that, like little Ken. I want to hear about little Ken and what boundaries looked like for little Ken.
That was a foreign concept for me, Joyce. I don't know what you're talking about as little Ken with boundaries. That's like a, what word is that? Okay, so I suppose to give you the timeline of my growth and also my relationship with the word boundaries, I had a very controlling upbringing. I had a very painful time at school where I was bullied. I did not enjoy the first 18 years of my life. I mean, I look back on it now and go, man, I got through some tough shit. But at the same time, I wasn't modeled boundaries. I was very much without friends and I did feel very isolated. And so when I lived overseas for a year in Japan, that really sort of washed away a lot of the beliefs I had about myself, that I was unpopular. I couldn't, you know, work on myself to be more attractive physically by exercising. And so a lot of the, I suppose, stains from my school experiences were gone, and I realized a few things about myself that I didn't know before, which was great. So that was one act of healing. But it took, but you know, off the back of that, I really clung to my friends. I really wanted to be with them because I was so scared that I was not a good person. I was so scared that they'd leave me because they were bored of me for some reason. And I was also really conscious of the fact of how my image looked to other people. I'd impression manage my social media so that way it looked glossy and perfect. But over time, I really learned that I was not feeling good inside of me. To give you an idea of the interactions I used to have with people, I would be the kind of guy who'd cram 3 to 4 people in a single day just to try and see them. But the quality of time that I would spend with them was really minimal because I'd be constantly going from event to person to party to this to that. I was so concerned with the idea that if I didn't see them within a specific day of the week, they would want to hang out with me. They'd think I'm a bad friend. They'd think that I'm not a good person. I was also deeply worried, almost like in this social anxiety kind of way, of people's opinions of me, even if I'd never really had much interaction with them. For example, I might have met you, Joyce, a long time ago, and if I hadn't heard from you for 3 weeks, I'd be thinking to myself, oh my God, does Joyce hate me? Like, what have I done wrong? What did I say in my last message? And it was really quite haunting because I'd be going through this moment of self-doubt with all my interactions with people, no matter if they were an acquaintance or a close friend. When I had a massive abrupt breakup a couple of years ago with a guy I very much loved, I think that's when I really started to work through a lot of the doubt that I'd had in myself. Because, you know, if we don't trust our friends, what that's really saying is we don't trust ourselves. We don't trust our own boundaries. We don't trust our own understanding of whether or not someone's a good person for us. Because if we're constantly self-doubting ourselves, well, how can there be any trust to begin with in the first place? So it made me realize quite a lot that I'd outsourced my happiness. I was requiring a lot of external validation in order to feel, make me feel good about myself. And if I wasn't showing up to all the events, if I wasn't the guy propping up all the parties and sorting out all the things, because I was very much seen by all my friends as a very entertaining guy. And I got to be honest, not only was it exhausting, but being pulled left, right, and center by my own volition to just say yes to everyone, I would just finish some days being like, man, I'm so exhausted. I can't even do anything else. But then next minute I'm with my family doing, you know, a big dinner on a Sunday. And these were things that I didn't want to do. I hated those dinners. I didn't have the courage to speak up about it. Instead, I just get kind of passive aggressive and just be like, okay, we're done, goodbye, and run up to my room. So I think that since the breakup that I had, I started to realize a lot of things that weren't working out, like I already mentioned. And so the idea of boundaries for me, that's when it came in, you know, a couple of years ago when I was like, oh, okay, I can say no to things and it will still be okay. And because in childhood, if I ever said no to something I didn't want to do, I'd usually get shouted down and told that I was a bad child for saying no, when in fact all I wanted to do was just say, I don't enjoy this, so I'd prefer not to do it. So I'd already been told at a young age that no was somehow not a viable answer. Ironic in the age of consent, when my parents were trying to teach me all about the power of no and then telling me that I actually can't have my own no in a family environment. So that wasn't particularly great. So when I started growing, I started actually realizing there were many people I didn't want to keep hanging out with. There were many actions that I was just tired of. Friends who would just talk to me about nothing and not even listen to me when I was feeling down. People who wanted me to hang out to events which I just did not want to be a part of. People who wanted me to eat food that made me feel unwell, and just I didn't enjoy that whole process at all. And so I got to the point where I started exercising my nose quite regularly, and boy, did that reveal a lot of things. It really made me realize who are the people I want to spend more time with and who are the people that needed to leave my social life, and that meant me backing away from them because they just did not respect me. It was really scary because my first thought was, oh, people are going to hate me. But then after a while, I realized actually the people who I want to be with will respect my no, and they did. So I think in the end of the day, it was really stepping into a very uncomfortable place and getting used to the idea that maybe I won't be around the same number of people that I'd built up to build up my shaky self-esteem, but that it was okay because I would actually be liberated and freed from believing that I had to do things in order to feel temporary happiness. Whereas now, saying no is the most liberating thing I have ever done, and I have to say I am the happiest I've ever been because I keep to a quality group of people who respect me and I respect them back.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And like one question I had while you were talking is, you know, you were known as the party person and you were super entertaining and all these things, and you felt that that was not necessarily you in your most like authentic form. I'm wondering, right, like who was that person? Like, why did you want to be that person? And then who have you discovered that you actually are? And what has that process been like?
That's a really great question, Joyce. I think what I can share with you is that the party person evolved from my time overseas living in Japan in a dorm with a bunch of guys. And that was amazing. I won't discount that. It was amazing for me. It was a really transformative period. It got me out of my shell to try all kinds of different things and to really explore, you know, new aspects of my life. Because growing up in a very sheltered environment, you know, I didn't drink until I was 21. I didn't have sex until a bit later than that. And, you know, it was sort of like a discovering period for me of really just putting myself out there and doing lots of quote unquote risky things in order to feel good about myself and to fit in with a bunch of people who were in my social circle. That social circle consisted of plenty of people who were, you know, regularly taking drugs, were binge drinking all the time, some of whom were cheating on their partners. And for me, I somehow normalized this and thought, well, that's just the way the world is and that's just the way things are and it's okay. But I got to be honest, Joyce, that was never really my tribe. That was never really the group of people that I wanted to spend time with because it was very shallow. It was kind of like taking temporary relief from real pain that was still, you know, beneath the surface. But it helped me in many ways because it allowed me to understand things that I didn't have in childhood, which was a sense of freedom. So I was like, okay, cool. I know what I like that. But real authenticity for me has meant more than just going out every night with a bunch of people. It's really meant for me knowing, okay, I can actually make really solid connections and friends, but they don't have to be the people that drag me out to all these different, well, actually, I shouldn't say drag me out, that encourage me to go out and enjoy that addictive cycle of partying, drugs, all that sort of stuff. To be completely honest, I never really liked it. There was always like this feeling inside of me, which was just like, I don't really like this or agree with this. And I think the more I started listening to that feeling, the more I came to realize the kind of person that I am is the kind of person who would rather just spend quality time alone. And though I know we've joked about the Myers-Briggs test and once upon a time I was labeled as an introvert, I feel like I've now become more of an extrovert. But funnily enough, I'm more of an extrovert who wants alone time and actually wants to spend more quality time with the right people than go out crazy all the time with a bunch of people. So To summarize my answer, authenticity for me has really meant that Ken is the kind of guy who likes to just take a chill, spend some quality time. Like the other night, you know, our gay pride festival, I was just so exhausted with the idea of going out. But instead, we had a bunch of mutual mates just come over to mine. We were sipping water as we were talking about relationships. And I was just like, perfect evening. The reverse of that might have been, you know, going crazy until the sun rose the next morning.
Yeah, and that's so wild because as you're talking, I feel like I've had parallel experiences. Like I know exactly what you're talking about because on one hand, there's this idea of the group that you're hanging out with and this feeling of normalizing. And I also see this parallel between like freedom being equated with indulgence, I guess.
Yep.
And then feeling like that is free when you are actually not free. I think that whole experience was actually characterized by fear and by loneliness, by disconnection. But it felt like, oh, we're all here. It's us against the world. We're going to go get fucked up. You know, it's just like that feeling of adventure. It's just wild because I'm just, it's all coming back to me like as you're talking. And I'm just like, man, this freedom is actually not freedom. Because no, freedom would be what you're doing, which is saying no and feeling okay to be like, yo, we're sipping on water. We're talking about relationships. It's a chill night. We don't have to do like 50 grams of cocaine or whatever people do these days.
50 grams.
People are going to make fun
of me. That's a modest amount. By the way, I should clarify that though I've never actually touched a gram of coke or any drug in my life, I will say though, like in the Sydney kind of crowd, that's a modest amount.
Oh my gosh. Well, anyway, I won't speak further on that topic. But yeah, I think just that I lost my train of thought. Help me out here, Ken. I don't remember what I was saying.
Oh, look, we had parallel lives. And I think that you're right. Like when you were saying like it's that freedom of indulgence versus that freedom to say no, I agree with you completely. I think that, you know, it's crazy to think that with all the liberty to do what we want to do, you look back on hindsight and go, yeah, that came out of some desperation to just feel connected. I actually have to say I see a lot of that within, you know, the LGBTQIA plus community, particularly for gay men. I see so many gay men who are, you know, putting on a lot of great photos of them at the pool party, the boat parties, they're with their friends. But the real question is, and this is something that I had to learn for myself the hard way, who are your real friends? Because if you cannot connect with these people at a deep, intimate level, and I use the analogy, if you can't talk to this person like you would to a therapist, then they're not really your friend. Because at the end of the day, if you can't have that emotional connectivity with someone, there's something wrong, but you actually can't be vulnerable. So that was a hard evolutionary process for me. And I think that with that kind of crowd, you're never going to get that. Specifically, I'm not talking about like gay men who party. I mean like people who party in general, because that addictive cycle is numbing your emotions and keeping you away from the baggage that you're carrying.
That is so interesting because I think some people listening right now might be like, what? Because like talking to their therapist is like so different from the way that they engage with their friends. So I could see that being just sort of like a whoa, like really? But at the same time, like people like you and I think almost every interaction I have is like
therapy.
With a therapist. But yeah, I'm just thinking of people that I've talked to where I'm just like asking them questions and they've got like this blank look on their face. It's like they've literally never thought about these things before. They don't care for it. And you're just like, how have you gone through life? It's kind of like what you're talking about. It's just the people that just stay distracted, I guess.
Correct.
And instead of digging in and addressing some of these things, it's just like, oh, life is about, you know, I don't know, going to the next thing and getting a good job and all these things. Everybody has the capacity to create, to be a part of something bigger than themselves, right? But some people just get locked in to that path, right? I don't know if this is making sense at all for you. I'm just like,
oh, it is
expressing.
It is. In fact, I think before I reflect one back on what you just said, I want to make it very clear when I say talking to your therapist, I think what I mean is it's good to have a friend who can call you out, meaning that it's good to have a friend who can see the patterns that you have displayed over your interactions and go, by the way, I've noticed this. It's something that I've noticed and you keep bringing up that you're stuck. Have you also considered this particular pattern of behavior too? Because I think when you get someone who's giving you that honesty and transparency, that's a real friend. Not the friend who goes, oh, yes, that sounds like a good idea. Oh, yes, that sounds great. Oh, yes, this, that, the other. You don't want a yes man or a yes ma'am. You want someone who is able to give you that honest feedback in a way that's compassionate to who you are. And so I think if you can't get that from a friend, well, then you've really got to consider the fact that your friends aren't actually giving you the quality feedback that you might require in your life too. Because if you're the kind of person who's rocking up, you know, hungover all the time and coming back with people all the time and you're complaining, you know, you feel disconnected and your friend just goes, oh, it's okay, it's a phase. I mean, they're not doing you a favor. They're really not doing you a favor at all in terms of addressing some of those wounds that you might be hiding. And linking this onto what you just said, you know, I think that in terms of feeling locked in, people do feel locked in. I think they feel like it's sort of this weird dichotomy of like, must go to work and work hard at X job to please the parents, must fulfill the family role, must then not show the crazy addictions that are on the side to help me cope with the crap that I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I had this conversation the other day with a bunch of mates and colleagues, and I said, I think society has actually geared us to be emotionally unavailable. When we think about the way we've been built, Joyce, I think that society in these fast-paced, productive environments would have us be following this ideal image of a man who has got their shit sorted, who has like a high paying job, who, you know, is tall, healthy, well paid, and somehow just makes everything better in the bed. And I just think that as a consequence for men and women, we learn from a very young age, whether we're told or not, that sensitivity, emotional vulnerability is not on the table. And kind of like a volcano that's about to erupt, I think people in these roles, they suppress so much of their crap with their addictions, whether it be to work, drugs, alcohol, food, you name it. I think that a lot of that, or even sex, you know, I think that for a lot of...
You're missing relationships.
Of course. Good old relationship addictions. Or even chemistry chasing too, because I know that a lot of, you know, men and women will be in it just for the first few weeks and then go, I'm bored. You know, I'm no longer interested in you. And then bounce off to the next person because they think that that's what they need. The point is that I think that, you know, is it any surprise that we feel locked into these kinds of roles and even into this kind of format because we've been given this from a very young age. Here's your template. Go fulfill it.
Yeah. All of these things are connecting where it's like, you know, whether it's in a friend group where it's a microcosm of culture, right? Or it's on society at large where you're trying to fit this role, this identity. And I realized as you were speaking, if you don't know who you are, like separate from this identity that people put on you or try to put on you, then you will do anything to like get those people's approval. And that's when saying no becomes very difficult because literally you will do everything. And not only that, I think there's self-deception involved where it's like, oh, this is what I want, right? Like this is totally the cool thing. Like I've talked about my past sex and love addiction as like a costume that I put on. There's a picture of me. I might put it in the show notes. It's actually really funny. I was out with my friend's girlfriend who was a stripper and we went shopping together. I went out partying in the street wearing like lingerie, basically. I was like not covered at all. And to me, that's like the epitome of the costume I was actually wearing, like metaphorically and literally. This attention grabbing thing I thought was cool, you know, how much I was drinking was like what I would wear to people, you know. I'd be like, oh yeah, I got so fucked up last night and like, oh, slept with blah, blah, blah. It's like you wear it for power in a way.
100%.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to take that kind of, you know, if you want to call it a dress, the role you're talking about, like, it's hard to take that dress off when you've built so much of your identity around it, because you even projected and flaunted to others, oh my goodness, I used to do the same thing too. I used to shame people for not drinking as much as me. I'd be like, oh, you know, you're just drinking a screwdriver. Bitch, please, I've been drinking Long Island iced tea since I was 21, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, you know, you just become, with all due respect, quite trashy. Like, you know, you just sort of, you find power in the costume, the lack of authenticity, because you're like, this is who I am. It's like, look at me. I've got all these friends who are around. I used to quote people who I knew from overseas. I used to quote people who slept with everyone and their neighbor and be like, oh my goodness, like, I have this friend who's beautiful and has, you know, the most amazing sexual advice you'll ever hear in your life, blah, blah, blah. And it sort of just became, with all due respect, quite shallow. It just became sort of this whole thing of like, look at me, you know, with all the pretty things that I have in my life. I've lined all of this up and it just looks perfect. Boy, oh boy, was it not. Like, I mean, there's this great line that Eckhart Tolle has in A New Earth. To paraphrase it, he basically says, if you were to strip all of that away, who would you be? And my short answer is not much, because I tell you what, that was a shaky facade that I had for a very long time in my life. And I look back and go, who the hell was I? Like, that was not who I am today. And it was certainly not with any respect to boundaries whatsoever. In fact, it was a very boundaryless role. So I think, like, when we think about authenticity, which I think typically has been characterized, especially in the LGBT community, I feel like the marketing for it is, you know, be your authentic self means be gay, like, come out of the closet, so to speak. And I don't think that does it justice. I think real authenticity is knowing who you really are, like, for your whole self, and also what your terms and conditions are. I always say to my clients, you know, boundaries aren't just about saying no. Boundaries are about the respect you have with yourself and, by extension, what you deserve from people around you. To give it an analogy, I actually used this with one of my clients the other day. I said, imagine you are running a swimming pool, and on the walls, you clearly lay out that people need to come with a flotation device when they're coming into the swimming pool. And you've got some people just coming in with no flotation device whatsoever, and it's clearly stated on the wall that it's required for both your protection and theirs, and they're now violating it, and they're willingly doing so. You know, you, as the owner of your pool, have the right to say, actually, I don't allow this, because this is now in putting me in danger and also potentially putting you at harm as well. So it really challenges a lot of narratives we've had growing up, because on one hand, the idea of asserting ourselves is damn hard, because we've grown up in an age of don't be selfish, or that's egotistical. There is nothing selfish or egotistical about standing up for yourself and saying no to someone who is getting you to do something that you don't feel good about. I mean, let's look at the biggest, you know, worst case scenario of all. Like, you know, there's a reason why battered wife syndrome is a well-known phenomenon for men and women, especially women, because it's that idea of, by putting up with the little offenses, the big ones just get swept under the rug. It's, and I've even said this to my clients and also to my followers on Instagram, you know, like, I've made this whole song and dance saying, if you get ghosted, call that stuff out. And some people will be like, oh, well, why should I? Because they're not worth it. It's like, that's not the point. It's not about them. It's about the words you use on yourself. If you say they're not worth it, what you're really saying is, I don't want to cause a fuss. But what you really should be thinking about is, well, actually, I'm calling this out for myself, so that way, if I ever go through something like this with a partner, I call it out straight away rather than suffer the consequences of not having boundaries down the road.
Yeah, I love that. Another thought I had too is, like, costumes are sometimes like the automated reactions you have, or at least for me, where I sometimes say something and I'm just like, why did I say it? I didn't believe that at all, but it just came out because, like, I've heard it so many times. Oh, and yeah, I think that's like similar, where it's like, well, they're not worth my time. And it's like, that's a costume they're wearing. It's like, do you actually believe that? Or is, like, is that how you've convinced yourself you don't have to say something? And you don't, right? You don't have to do anything. I was also wanting to go further with that pool analogy, because, like, I saw myself in that situation And I'm definitely the type of person that it's like, if we're friends and they're all friends and everybody's like hanging out, having a good time, and then they want leniency, right, with the rules. And they're like, yeah, but you know that, you know, we're really safe. We're really great swimmers, you know. And I'm like, but like, you need a flotation device, you know? So like, how would you recommend that people deal with a situation like that, where it's just like, man, they keep pressing on my no, and it's not like bad feelings. It's like, I think they're friends, question mark. I don't know.
I think then this comes to the ultimate question of empowerment, which is you choose. You choose when to lift those boundaries for people. Because at the end of the day, I think having flexible boundaries is a real mark of empowerment, to actually go, okay, you know, on this circumstance, I'm going to choose to do this. I fully acknowledge the consequences of my actions if this comes to pass. And I allow myself to do this, knowing that I believe that, you know, in this circumstance, that by having, you know, my friends, using the analogy, say that they're good swimmers, so be it. You know, it's on me to accept this as part of, you know, our friendship. And that I decide to allow them on this. And then if anything does happen, at least I know I can say, well, I chose to be lenient on this particular circumstance. And if anything happens, I know what to do going forward. So
yeah.
I think we have to give ourselves that room for flexibility with our boundaries. It's not about being so rigid to the point where it's like, you cannot come in Gandalf style and being like, you shall not pass. It's more of about having the capacity, not out of fear to let people in to the pool, but rather to be like, it's almost like stepping into the worst case scenario. This is a great exercise for anyone who's going through anxiety and is worried about the future. You really need to almost like just take a step, like a moment to just think, okay, well, what's the worst case scenario of my actions? Like, if I were to do this, what would be the worst case scenario? Oh, okay, someone trips and hurts themselves in the pool. Then, okay, how would I handle that? Oh, okay, I just call an ambulance, and I probably wouldn't allow these people back into my pool again, because it's clear that they, you know, they don't know what they're talking about, and probably also not someone I want to continue spending time with, because they clearly don't have the capacity to acknowledge their own flaws and also their own capabilities in this environment. So I'm not going to allow that going forward. So you see, it gives you that scope to sort of visualize, okay, well, here's what I would do if this were to happen. I'm confident with that now. Yeah, you can come into my pool.
Yeah. No, I love that. The idea of choosing, because even as I was talking in this situation, like, you could see my body language, everything is sort of like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
This aspect of like, I'm being convinced, and that feels coercive within me. And if I had said yes, right, I would have felt coerced and I would have felt resentful if something had happened. But being able to say, no, I'm doing this because I'm choosing this, and then accepting the consequences, then there's this sense of responsibility too, of like, oh, it's not your fault for coercing me. Like, I chose this with you. It's not your fault. So like, that's how I would see it. It's like from a different place, there's more power there.
Yeah, there is. There is. And I think also to add to that too, Joyce, it really allows you to feel more confident in yourself. It builds trust with yourself. You know, one of the common things I often hear from my clients sometimes say to me is, I can't trust guys. I just can't trust guys. I'm like, that's lovely. But let's learn about trusting yourself, because ultimately it's not about trusting other people. It's about trusting the standards of what you're willing to take, what you're willing to put up with. Because it's not about all guys being bad. Like, that's just ridiculous. It's about the kind of behavior that you're accepting and what you're willing to put up with as a consequence.
Totally. Yeah. Because I've seen, like, this goes back to the gaslighting thing. It's like, if you can't trust your own instincts,
yes,
of like, is this person gaslighting me or not? Then it's easy to be like, yo, they're gaslighting me. But maybe they're not intentionally trying to gaslight you. They're just very convincing and they know what they believe in, you know? Like, actually, even now, one of my greater core fears is like being afraid that somebody is manipulating me, that like they didn't feel for me the way that I thought they did because of like the circumstances or like their behavior. I'm like doubting myself. I'm like, oh my gosh, what if they're not? What if they're upset? Like all these things, just distrusting like my own instincts. So I totally get that. I understand that. But then it's like an extra step when you're saying like, oh, they hate me. But it's like, yeah. No, take the step back and be like, no, the story I'm telling myself, right? Going back to Brené Brown and things like that. I mean, we didn't go back, but with Brené Brown, it's like, we're always going back to her. but yeah.
Of course we are.
There's just this idea of like the story, right? It's like, I feel as if this person hates me. And that's the story that I'm telling myself. And I feel this way and I know it's not true, but there's a possibility it could be true, but it's probably not. But allowing yourself to like separate from that instead of seeing that as truth, because that's when it gets a little bit dangerous, right? Because you're like, oh, everybody's out to get me. It's like, no, that's the story that you're telling yourself based on how you feel in certain situations, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I love that you brought that story up from Brené Brown, not just because we've been going back to her, but because you're right. The story that we tell ourselves is compelling and dangerous because firstly, where the hell did it come from? You know, that story didn't just pop out of a vacuum. That would have come from somewhere. And more importantly, is it serving you? I think that this is the thing, Joyce, that I would say in these sort of circumstances when it comes to relational dynamics in terms of like, do they hate me? My answer is, do you have any evidence to suggest this individual does not like you? 99% of the time, and the most normal circumstances, the answer is there has been no feedback given to you directly by the individual to suggest they do not like you, in which case you can then go, oh, okay, that's right. Well, then I guess there's nothing wrong. And you can even categorize it, be like, every time I'm with them, they're always friendly with me. They always like to hang out with me. And I'm like, good. Well, then the question is, do you like hanging out with them? And if you say yes, then it's like, well, then is the story valid? And if the answer is no, dump the story. It doesn't serve you. However, if it's your instinct that's giving you these like moments of anxiety, and you'll feel that differently. The difference, and I always, you know, I love talking about intuition and instinct. And I think that if it's coming from down in your gut, like you've got like a gut reaction where you're just like, oh, there's something weird about this. That is so different from anything that comes up here. Whatever goes on up here is usually your ego giving you like anxiety over nothing. But when it's coming to, say, a relational dynamic where you sense something in your gut where you feel like there's something off, trust that intuition above anything else, because I tell you what, you know, even if everything is looking great on the surface, everything's hunky-dory, oh boy, 99% of the time, your gut knows with absolute precision that there's something not quite right. And the only thing to do in that circumstance is not to wallow in fear, but to step into your fear and address it with the person that you're with. I mean, that's the greatest act of self-love that you can give to yourself, because I tell you what, you know, it's better than bearing that and being like, oh, well, you know, I'm sure it's nothing. Your gut never lies, and your gut will be right again down the line when something pops up in the road. And it's worse. The worst thing you can do is beat yourself up down the line being like, I should have listened to my intuition. I don't trust myself. It's like, well, actually, no, you just didn't know how to respond in that situation. Don't beat yourself up. Everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah, totally. And another aspect of boundaries too, as you're talking, I was like, so many people have this like one-sided discussion with themselves and the story. Mm-hmm. And I've found it really empowering sometimes to just ask directly, like, how do you feel about me? And like most people will tell you, right? Sometimes in the past, like I would be afraid to ask that question because I was terrified to hear the answer. And so it's like you play this game where you're like, ooh, let me read this and see if like they feel about me this way. And it's like you're trying to like read in between the lines. But the problem is that when you're reading between the lines, it could go either way, right? So it's very much like, okay, so just communicate. And so that's actually been very difficult for me, like being able to express what I actually want to know versus what I'm trying to like tease out because I'm too embarrassed to ask. Cause I'm like, I don't want to seem like clingy or needy and be like, oh, do you like me? But it's like, no, like, I actually want to know. And so that's part of like the identity versus acting in freedom, right? It's like there's this dichotomy of who you think you should be and who you are.
Yeah. And to add to that too, I think it can get hard when you don't know how to ask the questions in a way that's going to validate that. For instance, you know, the question of, you know, how do you feel about me versus do you like me? I mean, same question, different presentation, well, different way of articulating it really, and can have such a different impact on the person that you're asking to. I mean, I think one, I love open-ended questions because they allow people to actually give scope. But if you give someone a yes or no question, power's in their hands to say, you know, yes or no, and it could go either way, and it's not really help. It's not in service of you. I remember once there was a guy who just abruptly messaged me being like, you know, do you like me? And I was just like, dude, I've known you of all of like three times across the course of 8 months, and I've only spoken to you four times. And I even said to him, no, I don't in that particular way. And I'm not sure that I understand where this has come from. Other than that, though, I'm sorry if I gave you an impression to believe that I actually had romantic feelings for you. Because at the end of the day, I was just like, this just came out of nowhere. And then I got this really passive-aggressive reply being back like, well, you just didn't seem like yourself. And I'm like, firstly, gaslighting. Secondly, you wouldn't have known who I was off the back of those four discrete encounters across the 8 months. I mean, like, right. And then, you know, this is the problem, Joyce, is that like then people will go, oh, well, I tried being honest and it didn't work out for me. It's like, yeah, because you asked the wrong fucking question. Like, it's like, what were you expecting? And also, you know, it's just ridiculous that people have that. I mean, look, on one hand, let's be compassionate. I get it. I get that we haven't learned how to actually ask these kinds of questions and that asking these questions is hard. So credit where credit's due. But then can you at least be a bit more nuanced in that? You could actually say something like, listen, I have seen the way, you know, we've interacted with each other over these particular events. And normally for me, it means someone's interested in me and I'm just curious, you know, how do you feel about me? Boom. You've got evidence.
Beautiful.
It's your reality. I can choose to say whether or not I believe it to be true or not, and that's totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like I said, you know, on one hand, yes, you know, we don't know what we don't know, but on the other hand, ask better questions.
And I think also like realizing when you're asking a question as like a trap or with like an expectation, it's like, oh, do you like me? It's the worst case scenario thing. Like I've told clients this where it's like, okay, so what's the worst thing that they could say back to that question? If they say no, like how do you feel? That kind of shows you like why you're asking the question to begin with. Are you asking because you're curious and you want the truth? Or are you asking because you want affirmation and like validation? And you're like, oh my God, like give me love, you know?
They love me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, as we sort of wrap up here, you know, something that I've been dwelling on too to keep me humble is like this idea that our identity isn't black and white, our growth isn't black and white, right? So right. Saying things like, you know, I used to be that way, but now I'm not that way anymore. I think the better question, like you said, where do I still struggle with that? And where do I still need improvement? So like the idea of saying no, right? Do you feel like 100% of the time you're able to say no whenever you need to? Or are there specific areas of your life that you feel like you do still struggle with and that you want to work on?
That's a wonderful question. I think personally what I would say is that when it comes to saying no and being in a position to actually have that, I think it's an evolutionary process. Like, I mean, I think for me, I'd say I've gotten a lot better at saying no and being upfront with my boundaries too. Like, and I want to clarify for anyone listening, boundaries is more than just saying no to someone too. Going back to that conversation we were just having before about, you know, asking the right questions, it's about understanding and helping people to understand who you are and giving them the language to actually be able to like go, oh, okay, this is who you are. Okay, now I understand how to work and operate with you too. Because, I mean, the basis of all misunderstanding is exactly that, not knowing what the other person's world looks like and how to interact with them. So I think when it comes to saying no specifically, I think my unique challenge, it would come out of a point of when I'm not operating out of my best. For example, if I'm removed in a foreign location, I don't have access to amounts of resources. I don't have a lot of friends that I can connect with, you know, easily. You know, that lack, I think, can mean that my boundaries diminish because I'm in a situation where I need connection, financial support, a job, whatever it may be. And so I would probably put up with crap just to get to a better place of feeling good about myself. Whether or not I will or not is completely up to the circumstances that I'm in. But I think the only way to prepare oneself for that is to actually end up going out there and doing it in the first place. And I think it's hard because, you know, when we are operating on empty, I think boundaries are the last thing that we're willing to, you know, to enforce because we're just so hungry for connection. I've had a client who even, you know, he was dealing with a guy who was clearly emotionally unavailable. And I said, you can call their behavior out. And he's like, oh, but I don't want to. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't want to? And he said, oh, but, you know, if I do that, I'm asking for too much and I don't want to be alone. And that was the core issue right there, is that he didn't feel like he had connection. Wow. Therefore, he was willing to put up with bad behavior just to get it. So even though I can say from a position of feeling good about myself, like, oh, I would never do that. The answer is I have no clue. If I was in a situation like him, I probably would do the same thing.
Yeah, it just seems like as desperation goes up, your boundaries might decrease. Yeah, your boundaries go down. I was like, oh, there's a relationship here. Because no matter what it is, right, like for you, it was like a physical safety and like also connection in that situation would allow you to have resources too. I guess there are some people who are just so afraid that people won't accept them for mm-hmm. who they are, what they truly are feeling, and that they're willing to lie, which is self-deception, you know, like saying yes mm-hmm. when you mean no. And all these things are tied together. And I definitely really want to write like a dissertation on this now, because I'm like, ooh, this is interesting, where there's like constellations of things that we are picking out right now. I don't know if you're sensing that.
Oh, I am. Maybe not the dissertation, but yes, with like all the links, yes, I am.
Because I've never actually like put these things together. And like something that just I want to express too is like I really value conversations like this, where it's less about two people talking at each other or like sharing information that we've already decided upon, but it's more about like discovering in the moment of like, oh my gosh, this connects with that and this. It's almost like a live meditation between two people, where it's like you're conscious of what rises up in you and you're conscious to what they're saying. It's just like this flow. I love that. You know what that does relate to is recognizing what healthy interactions look like in your life mm-hmm. and how to get more of that, right? And realizing that maybe your baseline right now is not, your intuition might not be on point at the moment, because you might hear criticism and get butthurt about it, or you might hear somebody say no and you're upset that they said no. But if that is actually healthy, how do I flip how I feel about that and attract more of those people into my life? Because I think there is a period of just like, it's unnatural, right, for a lot of people to operate in that sphere. Because like you said, they didn't have examples of those boundaries growing up. So I think it's being willing to acknowledge for a second that your worldview might not be correct and that if it hasn't been working for you, maybe try something else, right? Like experiment with that.
Yeah, I love exactly what you've just said. And I also think too, to my last point is, to add to everything you just said, is if you're of the belief that you are unlovable, that you're going to lose people, when currently, to date, you have friends, people genuinely say they love you, then it's time to really check in with yourself and go, what reality do I choose to accept for myself? The story in my head, which has come from bad conditioning, or the reality that even if these people were to leave me today, I have gained the skills necessary to actually make friends and be resourceful and to set proper boundaries for a tribe who want to support me. Because at the end of the day, I think that it's important to recognize our own skill set for connections and for growth, rather than to cloud our judgment in thinking that we're somehow still living out the experiences we had in childhood, which no longer serve the current version of who we are.
Man, y'all, I was just so inspired by this conversation with Ken. There was a lot of discovery. There was a lot of questioning of ourselves and realizing that we walk alongside our clients and we have so much to learn. And as we learn about these topics, they continue to unfold as we grow as well. And I think the biggest takeaway that I got from this episode is that we have to make sure that we are good. Boundaries starts with self-awareness, because if you don't know who you are, how are you supposed to show other people who you are? And that includes knowing what you like, what you don't like, what your needs are. Because at the end of the day, it is not somebody else's responsibility to tell you where your boundaries should be. Instead, we are all responsible for protecting ourselves, for wrapping ourselves in boundaries, and showing people how we want to be treated, how we want to be respected. So I hope you enjoyed this episode and that it made you see boundaries in a little bit of a different light. Please let me know your feedback. You can find me at The Abundance Coach on Instagram. And if you'd like to support this podcast, you can do one of two things or both. You can go to iTunes, leave a review so we can get the word out about the podcast. Or second, you can go to gotabundance.co/boba and you can buy me a boba. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Because some people feel like, oh, I'm being needy and all that stuff. And it's like,
no,
but that's literally what it means. It's like your needs are not being fulfilled. So it's like, I don't know why there's a negative connotation now that I'm saying it out loud. But yeah, maybe you are being needy and that's a good thing. So
correct. Go forth. Set your boundaries.
Say no. Set boundaries.
Yes.
That's it.